like I said, I drove right by the house and started, you know, hosing off barns, and we weren't doing any good. I mean, everything was pretty well cooked. And
was it still windy?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, stuff was blowing in your face. There wasn't any smoke, though. The wind was blowing so strong that there wasn't, I mean, the ground was, the fire had already moved through. I mean, it was like a...
So did you have any ash?
No, I mean, it was all gone.
All gone?
It was in that, that's why that...
With that wind?
That smoke wall wasn't necessarily just smoke. It was all the ash and soot that was burning up, and the wind was picking that stuff up and blowing it so hard and so fast that, I mean, there wasn't hardly any ash or anything.
So were you able to save most of the barns?
No. We were, we're sitting there hosing off a tractor tire when we noticed that we saw some flames coming off of Dave and my mom's house, and we, you know, quickly loaded back up and headed to the house. But by the time we got over to it, it was, you know,
all engulfed.
It was all engulfed. You know, the fire department, Dan and Adam were sitting there trying to fight it, whereas if we had pulled over there when right away, you know, maybe we would have caught it when it was small enough.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was just a matter of minutes, and it was gone.
So was your mom still there?
No, she had left. We, matter of fact, we had passed her as that smoke wall was coming just 20, 30 minutes before.
Yeah.
And told her, you know, just get the heck out of here. And so, and she didn't, they didn't get anything out of the house. Not a thing.
The dog.
Doug the dog made it. Thank goodness. I think that's what everybody's concern was. Did Doug make it out?
That's good. So, that fire up there, after you couldn't do anything and it's pretty much burning everything, did you go elsewhere? Did you have cattle up that way?
We had cows all to the north of us, matter of fact, while the house was being consumed, we started hearing gunshots, and Dave had gone out in the pasture. We had right just north of their house is where we were doing all of our calving, mm-hmm. and all of our cows were calving at that time, and it got them all. I mean, I think we ended up with four or five orphan calves. The rest were either burned or had to be shot.
Yeah. So, did you shoot most of them on that day, or was it Tuesday?
No, it was the next morning. You know, had people come out and help. Larry Conradi and Hayden, and then John Kellenberger. There were several people that showed up the next day to help us put them down.
So what did you do with all of them?
Well, you put them in piles, and then documented it, took pictures and all that, and then had an excavator come in and dig a hole and pushed them into the hole and covered them up.
So how long did that take?
It didn't take them very long, maybe 3-4 days. We had 4 or 5 big piles that we had, and I want to say, yeah, 3 or 4 days, and that part of it was over with.
So Monday, were you out all night?
Yes. I never did. Russ Hensley and I came back after Dave's house was burnt. We still had half a tanker and half a spray rig, and that fire was, the wind had slowed down quite a bit. But there was a canyon to the south of us of a grass pasture that led right up to Dr. Spare's house. And it looked like that fire was headed that way. And there was just zero fire department around, I mean, other than Dan. And I mean, everybody was just scattered everywhere. I mean, Mark Cottenbaugh's house and Kellenberger's house. So, I mean, it's hit or miss here or there. And we didn't know if anybody was going to get, that anybody had been over to Randall Spare's house. And Dave said, you know, make sure his house does not burn, whatever you do. And so we loaded up all of our stuff and headed to his house and started hosing it down and doing everything we could. And Randall was out there. And thank goodness that fire didn't come up around there. And I think Mike Harden had made it out there with his tractor and had disced around a little bit to help slow it down a little bit. So we went there, and then the CRP field to the east of that was on fire, so we sat there and kind of watched it. And it was, by that time, you know, we're talking
Was it dark?
It was dark.
Had the wind shifted?
The wind had was, yeah, it was just kind of the, all the fire was back burning a little bit. And so there wasn't anything really significant going on. And we sat there and watched that fire, watched Randall's house put out some little spark ups around his house.
Had the temperature drop?
Yes, it was cold by this time.
Significantly?
Yes. It was super cold, which that helped slow the fire down, too, because there was a lot of moisture in the air. It felt like there was moisture in the air. I don't know if that's what it was or not. Well, we sat there till about 1 o'clock in the morning, 2 o'clock in the morning, and I sent Brock and Corey on home, and Russ Hensley was still with me, and I said, you know, I think we're, you know, probably out of the woods. And you could see fires all around town. I mean, mm-hmm. on the outskirts. And
were you up high enough to kind of see town?
No, I mean, you could see the lights of town and outlet of town. I mean, we could see. We weren't that much higher than elevation here. We never did go up on the hill. But when we came in, I dropped Russ back off at the fire station where his pickup was, and said, you know, let's go home and get some sleep. And it was so eerie when we pulled into town. There was nobody here. There was nobody. At the firehouse, there was two or three people in there, and everybody else was gone. And I dropped Russ off, and we went in for a minute, and then I dropped Russ off, and I went home, and I started thinking, my gosh, there's fires all around town, and there is nobody around. You know, if the wind picks up or it gets into a tree row by the football field or something like that. And after I sat there for about 30 minutes, I thought, I can't sleep. So I went and got back in my pickup. I started the spray rig on, and I started driving back out here north of town to go watch that fire. And, uh-huh. and lo and behold, behind me, there's these flashing lights. And it was Russ. He goes, well, I went home and I couldn't sleep. He said, I was afraid one of these fires was going to start up again. I was like, okay. So he and I went and sat about 2 miles north of town and just kind of watched fires. And we never did go to bed.
Did you talk to your wife anytime after she evacuated?
I talked to her after Dave's house was gone and we had hosed down Randall Spare's house. I called her explained to her what the situation was, and they were hunkering down for the night at the
high school.
Yes, they were at the high school, and so that was you know, I told her to get some sleep and not to worry. You know, town was going to be fine, and we'd see them the next day.
So when did they return?
She was here bright and early the next morning. I don't know what time it was. After it was about 6 o'clock, Ernie somehow opened up the country store, we were hoping he was going to open it up. I don't know if he did or not. And so I was sitting there waiting to get a cup of coffee or something, and Dr. Spare showed up at the vet, saw him pull into the vet clinic early, and so he and John and I got to talking, and they automatically went into their vet mode, and those two guys just started organizing everything and getting everybody lined up, and Mark Spare, Randall's boy, had drove down that night and was there. I mean, the sun was just barely peeking over the horizon, and everybody was loading bullets. And
could you still see fire?
You could still see smoke and fire off to the south and east.
So what about your pastures down in the southwest part of the county? Southeast, sorry.
At that point in time, I had driven out there, and where we had some grass and some cattle, that area, nothing was, I mean, there's some burn spots here and there, but it wasn't all consumed. And the fires, there were still some fires, but there was zero wind that morning. I mean, it was and that's where I probably made a mistake again, was, well, I'm going to unhook my spray rig and go take care of cattle and all this. That stuff's going to get put out because there's no wind. Well, you go out and you start seeing cattle on roads and start shooting cattle and this and that, and before you know it, you don't even realize it, but the wind's blowing again. And all those fires are up and up and blowing again. And so we did kind of the cattle thing till about noon, and then I hooked back onto my spray rig and got our tanker again, and we headed down to the south end of the ranch to help out down there.
So did you lose all your pasture?
Yes, every acre.
Did you lose all your cattle?
Every cow I had.
Did you lose equipment?
Lost all our equipment.
And all your barns?
All our barns but two. We lost two barns, two of them, or actually lost three barns and saved two.
And fencing?
All the fences. You know, we were pretty fortunate. All the fences burned, but in the past several years, we've done a pretty decent job of rebuilding fences, and so most of our fences were new fences. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them, you know, the posts burned, but they didn't burn completely up. The creosote post didn't burn completely up.
Right.
About every other one or every third one would be burned up, or the corners would be burned out. But other than that, those fences were in good shape. Now, the fences that we hadn't gotten to yet that were older fences, they were pretty well destroyed. I mean, they were 100% tear out and have to start all over.
So, like, Tuesday night, Wednesday, how are you feeling?
I was numb. I didn't feel anything for several days. I mean, there's just so much to do. I mean, we had cattle on wheat pasture, so we had all our cattle, our yearlings. We lost all of our cow-calf herd, but we still had all of our yearlings on wheat. And a lot of those wheat pastures are up against grass, and so those fences burned. And so we have cattle scattered everywhere. So it was, you know, we need to load four-wheelers. We need to go start finding cattle. And so, you know, half of us went south and were gathering cattle and trying to find them and get them somewhere.
Did you have other people helping you besides your employees?
Yes.
Did you have a lot of volunteers?
There was a bunch of volunteers the morning after the fire, guys that showed up with four-wheelers and horses, people willing to go help shoot cattle, people helping to go gather strays. It was almost overwhelming. It was almost like you had to almost be with them, though, because you couldn't explain to them, hey, this is our cat. This is, you know, this pasture here still got a good fence, or this wheat field here, we can drive them to that. You had to be with them, and there were so many people that, you know, we took three or four volunteers with us, and they helped. You know, Alex Stapleton came down, his boys came down. They do a lot of our well service for us. They came down and helped start dragging beds into piles. Mm-hmm. Toby Scott from Buckland was down here that morning helping get electricity going to wells where we could put whatever cattle were still alive.
Did you lose solar panels? Well, or did you just lose the...
No, we lost the solar panels as well.
Plus the wiring. So you didn't have any water for your cattle?
Well, a lot of our stuff is, thank goodness, most of our cattle were on wheat pasture, and there's windmills and...
Actual windmills
on those wheat pastures. And so majority of our cattle, other than, like I said, the cows and the babies, were on wheat fields with windmills. The cattle that were on grass, you know, there's no grass there and there's no cattle left alive, so we really didn't have to panic about trying to get water to them right away because there's nothing there.
Yeah. So you hadn't started moving cattle off the wheat.
No, the following week we were going to be getting really geared up, getting things moved around for graze out and kind of jockeying stuff around. Yeah. So luckily for us, you know, we had wheat pasture, or it could have been a lot worse.
Yes, very much. So what's your most vivid memory of the fire?
Gosh.
Can be more than one.
Probably two things. On the negative side, was sitting there watching the house that I grew up in burn. Mm-hmm. And nothing I could do. You know, I was sitting there with a water hose, a spray rig, and hosing it, and it's just watching it.
The wind blowing too fast.
Yeah, and it was just, and I can remember stepping away before it was completely engulfed and just sitting down for a minute. I was, you know, just a little bit overwhelmed for a minute. And, you know, you look up and, like I said, we were calving to the north of us. And sitting there and looking up and seeing those cows and those babies that were still alive, but yet they look like statues. I mean, they're just burnt. They're just standing there. I mean, they're alive, but burnt to, I mean, they're not going to make it. They're going to die, and they're sitting there just suffering. And just seeing that was, it made me sick. And then, but on the flip side of that, within a day, a guy by the name of Ben Winkler, don't know him from Sikkim, came from Iowa. He heard about it on Facebook and drove by it down the following day after the fire and was here. Was the fire on Monday?
Monday.
He was here on the Wednesday afternoon and just showed up. And, I mean, he was a good hand, and it was just...
What kind of things did he do for you?
Everything. I mean, from shooting cattle to dragging deads to helping me put up a fence to hold whatever we did have. I mean, just, it didn't matter.
How long did he stay?
He was here for 3 or 4 days. And, you know, it was just nice. At times, you know, when we're still chasing stuff down south, it's nice just to have somebody with you.
Yep.
And I, like I said, I didn't know him from Adam, and then to see the convoys of hay and stuff coming in.
Did you get some of
the
hay?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there was... I mean, I know they had a drop zone here, and I know Jeff Kay was busy trying to keep all that organized, and he started sending loads towards us. And I'm trying to think what day that was. It hadn't rained yet. It might have been 6 or 7 days after the fire, but we were trying to get a fence. We had to get a fence put up right there by around Dave's house quickly for some cattle that I'd bought prior to the fire that were coming in. I had to put them somewhere.
Yeah.
And it was early in that morning, and I look up the road, and it was just, if there was 2 trucks, there was 20 trucks. Just lined up with hay and people from Michigan, from all over. And, I mean, that was just, I mean, it made you feel really good. I mean, you were in a really bad spot, but it was almost, not that it was worth it, but at the same time, it was, man, that puts a whole new hope in humanity. I mean, to see all those people showing up.
So did you get a lot of volunteers to come help you?
Through the course of the weeks afterwards, we did. You know, there was a couple folks, from local, from Montezuma that came over, and Meade. There's two gentlemen that came and helped. And then we had a few groups come in from Wisconsin, I believe, Wisconsin or Iowa, and help put up, start tearing down fence and stuff. So there was always, seemed like every weekend there was somebody here. I was kind of, after a while, I was kind of like, well, I wish volunteers would quit showing up on weekends, because I kind of want a day. I want a day off myself. But
so did you go down and eat at the camp or at the school when volunteers were?
I never did go down there and eat. I felt like they probably had enough folks that they were feeding that they didn't need to feed me. I did take advantage of the high school lunch room whenever they had that going on. You know, one of the things the day after the fire, like I said, all of our shops and stuff were completely destroyed, and but there was some stuff that's salvageable, like benches and stuff like that we could, you know, repaint and fix those. And the day, I don't know if it was the day after or 2 days after,
if you think of the fire as being 2 days, Monday and Tuesday.
That's true. Yeah, it would have been Wednesday or Thursday that I had probably the best volunteers show up. And I don't know if they got anything done or not, but They got some work done, but they were all. They were all guys that had played basketball for me.
Cool.
And that was.
Like your high school teams?
Yeah. Giles Fox, Jay Lerman, Andrew Reimer, Nathan Reimer, you name it. Those, I mean, they were all out there, and I mean, there's several of them. I know I'm leaving a lot of them out, but that was pretty cool to see. Yeah. They could have sat out there and just played catch with a ball, and it would have made me send chills up my spine. They helped drag stuff out of our shops and do stuff like that. But that sent chills down my spine.
Did you ever have a hard time finding something for the volunteers to do?
Like I said, when the volunteers initially showed up, the early birds, the ones that were there the day after or whatever, and were, we got cattle here, and you don't know where to, you can't send them out there because they don't know, they don't know the lay of the land. Plus, there's no landmarks left to help.
Was it still kind of burning out there?
No, looked like a desert.
Dead?
The day after, it looked like a desert out there. I mean, there wasn't even any ash on the ground. The wind had blown so hard, it looked like the sand dunes around Winoka. I mean, it was just barren country. And it was the same way with volunteers that wanted to come in and help tear out fence. We could go show them a strip of land or something and say, hey, tear this out. But, they needed a tractor to pull posts with, probably. So, I'd sick them on rolling up wire and stuff. But a lot of them were young kids, too. And you feel kind of responsible for them. They fall off in a hole, get bit by a snake, which were, and at the time you didn't think anything was probably alive anyway. But and so it was kind of hard to take a complete advantage of those volunteers, just because you can be in 20 different places at one time.
Yeah.
And so that made it kind of more difficult. Yeah. But, I mean, we did take advantage of several of them that showed up, and thank goodness they did.
So who were some of the people or the agencies that proved most helpful during the fire?
Oh, I think all of them played a significant role, the as far as the FSA being mm-hmm. being really on the ball to get the ball rolling to help recoup some of that loss. The Christian Church with the food and all those Red Cross or whoever did that at the high school.
In the high school itself.
Yeah, I mean that was.
Yeah.
You have all this help or all these volunteers or people around you coming to help and they want something to eat or, they're hungry, you're hungry here's all this food for you. I mean, it wasn't hot dogs. I mean, it was food. I mean, the people that did that, whoever put those deals together, the high school, opening their doors, I really don't have any complaints on any of them. I think they all did a spot on job for what had happened.
Yep. So, do you have any experiences with wildfires before, or with controlled burns?
Yeah. No, we don't do much controlled burning around here because A, you don't know if it's going to rain again, so you're afraid to burn it, and then it's going to blow all summer.
Yep.
I've fought grass fires a lot in growing up and since I've been back. I say a lot, but some.
Ever seen anything like
this? This was like an explosion went off. Whereas, before if you had a grass fire on you, you get your spray rig, you go up there and you kind of see it might jump around a little bit and go down a canyon or something like that. But this was everywhere you looked. Everywhere you looked, there was fire all around you, and you didn't know what to do.
Did you have any contact with the strike teams that came in?
No, I sure didn't.
Or the helicopters?
I saw the helicopters the day after the fire, they showed up, but by that time, there was nothing, there wasn't anything smoldering out here. I mean, it was
gone.
Gone. So there was nothing for them to really do.
So they were mostly doing it south.
Mostly south and east, and I know like Garth's house and stuff like places like that. That you know there was still some grass around. I know they were there, but no, I didn't have any experience with them. But you know, from what I hear, it was something to see them go to work too.
Yeah, I think so. What are the physical and financial effects of the fire? Are they still ongoing?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
will they be for a while?
It will be for, I mean, it takes a while to recover from something like that. Fortunately for me, you know, KLA and...
the FSA?
FSA and other organizations have all been, I mean, just great.
Did you apply to the Community Foundation,
yes,
too?
Yes, and the Community Foundation. I don't want to leave them out. They were awesome, and that's... stuff like that, it almost makes you feel
like working with the FSA and the soil conservation that came in and did like fencing and, mm-hmm. and took care of burying the cattle and, or you know, set up some of those programs and then paid mm-hmm. some. Did you feel like they did a good job of and timely?
Yeah, I was shocked, especially through the FSA deal and even an organization out of Amarillo.
I don't remember what they were called.
I can't remember what they were called, but I mean, it was quick. You know, the only thing we're still kind of dealing with is the fencing stuff, and that's just because we're still not done getting it all put together.
Do you have most of your perimeter fencing?
Yes, all our perimeter's put back. All the north ranch is pretty well done. We just got maybe a mile or two left of stuff way up north that we haven't gotten to yet. But yeah, we're.
So how's your grass?
It's, you know, we caught a lot of rains after the fire, but they were all hard rains, and there was nothing there to hold that moisture.
Mm-hmm.
All of our ponds are full now, and a lot of that water ran off, and then we got so hot there in July, August, and the plant population is not the same as it was. I mean, that fire got so hot, it killed a lot of that plant population.
Yeah.
And so our grass is not anywhere, you know, where it needs to be. And so we'll have to manage that for the next several years and, you know, keep our numbers pulled back as to give that grass a chance to try to come back.
So have you done some restocking?
Yes. Yeah. We restocked. You know, a lot of people sprayed for weeds and stuff. Our theory, I guess, whether it's right or wrong, I don't know, was to get cattle back out on it as quickly as possible on really light numbers, but mm-hmm. that they would help keep the weed pressure down and the different types of grasses that you don't want. So we went ahead and stalked our pastures once they greened back up and just did it at a really light number. But you go look at it now, and it's you know, kind of rough looking right now.
Yeah, so, but we got rain recently.
We did have rain.
Have you been able to drill wheat?
No, but we're going to start as soon as we're done recording, I think. I hope.
So, what can you do or have you done to prepare for a future fire or major disaster?
You know, one thing is not let the grass get so out of control, I guess. I mean, we've been in a drought prior to the fire a couple of years mm-hmm. before, and so our theory was... save that grass as much as you can because you're going to get dry again. And, you know, we didn't graze as heavily as we should have. Try to keep tumbleweeds and stuff, or weeds growing in fence lines down. Try to get those sprayed better because those things, you know, you set a tumbleweed on fire and a 60-mile-an-hour wind catches it and that thing's like a little missile going off. You know, 2-3 miles down the road, just setting fires ablaze all over the place. So we want to try to keep our fence lines cleaned out as much as possible, and just pray for rain.
So, what about the community, or the county? Is what they can do.
I think
we were pretty prepared.
I don't think it doesn't matter. Nobody's prepared for something like that. I mean, that was. Hopefully I'll never see anything like that again, but I mean that was the absolute worst case scenario on top of a worst case scenario, and for what happened in a matter of a few hours, I thought our fire departments, our police departments, the schools, I thought everybody did what they should have done in that short amount of time. A lot of people made a lot smarter decisions than I would have under the pressure that they were put under.
Did you know that there was a lot of people that came to town to help coordinate the fire? Were you aware of the command center, or the fire departments that came?
I did not see, other than Mineola's fire department, mm-hmm. and then Dan and Adam, that was the one fire truck I saw the entire Monday.
Yeah.
At the time, I never questioned, how come there's not more fire trucks here? Because, leading up to the fire from the north coming down, I knew that, I saw that fire up north when it was moving northeast, and I knew the fire southwest was way bigger, and I never questioned it at all. These people, but they've got some serious trouble on their hands here. They're hogtied.
Yeah.
But whenever the wind shifted and everything, was happening, and I can't imagine what those folks were going through. I mean, being out in that, chasing after those fires. I mean, I'd be honest with you, I was petrified. I didn't know whether to turn right, left, or upside down. And what I tell everybody is everything I shouldn't have done is what I did, and everything I shouldn't have done is what I ended up doing.
Yeah.
And so those people that do that for volunteer or for a living, I've got a lot of respect for them.
So have you had the chance to kind of deal with your own emotional response to the fire and kind of think about or kind of get your own feelings about it?
I've
talked out, or
I haven't ever. It's one of those things. We're kind of in a. I was brought up, you start, get this job done, and then sit back, and it's time to drill wheat, you drill wheat. It's time to cut wheat, you cut wheat, or move cow, and you don't do anything else till that's taken care of,
right.
And you go at it nonstop until that's taken care of, and then you think about it. Well, with the fire. The fire was done, and then you had the initial, kind of start putting pieces back together, but it's still not done. We're still got shops we're putting up, and equipment we're still going through, and, fences here and there, along with all your other farm and ranch duties, you still have all this other stuff. And I really don't know that I've sat back and had a chance to talk it out or have a good cry about it, because I still see... We still got all this stuff to finish first.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting closer, and I think whenever that's finally, everything's kind of caught up, then I think I'll be able to sit down and take it all in.
I think it's going to take a while to get everything taken care of.
It's going to take folks a long time. I feel really blessed and fortunate where we're at the help we've received and that our recovery is going to be quick and I feel for people that don't have the help or don't have the resources. I mean, we have a ranch in Alva, Oklahoma that they were able to send resources up to help us, and mm-hmm. a lot of folks don't have that, so their recovery process is going to take longer, and so I feel like we're getting close to being back to somewhat normalcy, but you still look around and you see other folks, and it's until they're up and going too. Are we really back to where we need to be? No, not until everybody else is right there with you.
Yeah.
And that's what's been great about living here in Ashland, is that everybody kind of has that same mentality, and. I promise you wouldn't see that anywhere else. I mean, it's really neat to see.
Yep. So do you have any other thoughts or things that you'd like to say about this experience?
No, just for everybody that's put in time and effort, or just a hug, pat on the back. I can't thank those folks enough. I mean, I can't thank them. I can't thank the volunteers. I can't thank the members of this community, people on the foundation who's their time and putting all that together and working through that. The gals that cook for the volunteer. I mean, I can't put into words. I can't say thank you. I mean, I can, but I kind of feel like I'm undercutting all those folks. Kendall Kay and, I mean, everybody that helped in one way or another, I can't say thank you enough. Yeah. I just can't.
Just not enough.
It's just not enough. I almost feel, like I was trying to say earlier, I almost feel inadequate to, if I said, I mean, I can't explain it. It's just, you don't feel...
like you're worthy?
Yeah, like you're worthy. Yeah. And so...
What'd you think of the outpouring from agriculture, agriculture, and in the social media?
Right after it happened, when I was sitting there out in the front yard as the house was finishing burning up, and seeing the cattle and everything else, like I said earlier, I honestly was done. You know, I'm done with ag business. Is tough enough the way it is. Markets and drought and dealing with banks. And I mean, just it seems like it's one thing after another. And then this happened, and you're sitting there and you're looking at it. And my initial response right then and there was, as soon as this is over with and everything kind of straight, I'm out of agriculture. I'm done with it. I don't want any part of it. A lot of that was a knee-jerk reaction, but there was some validity to it. But as all those volunteers and all the people started showing up and people sending money that were all ag-related folks, you know, from Wisconsin, some folks from Jetmore, Kansas, and farmers and ranchers, man, after a day or two, you kind of sit there and you think, now, wait a minute. Yeah, it's tough doing this, but look at the people who have your back. It's the same people doing the same thing you are every day. And they're with you the whole way. And it's almost kind of like you felt like you were part of a big family, a nationwide family of farmers and ranchers, people from Florida. And at that point in time, you almost like kind of a complete 180. Instead of being done with farming and ranching, it was... Well, what else? I mean, this is the best occupation there is. Because look at all these folks. I mean, their values are along the same cores of yours, and they mean what they say. I mean, it's completely changed my perspective on agriculture and anybody that's involved in it. And it's been eye-opening. It really has. So I'm proud to be an ag. Because of those folks showing me, not because of anything else, but just knowing that those folks are out there and they're in ag too, it makes me want to be like them. I want to be able to help them. I want to be able to go and donate heifers or donate some cows to somebody else that's been through, you know, a tragedy. So it makes me want to be a better person, a better person in ag. So I'll be a farmer till God tells me I'm doing something else.
So any other thoughts?
No, that's about all I have. Just thankful for all the wonderful people around here.
So thank you for sharing your experience with us and taking your time to come in and talk about it.
Thank you for doing it.